Welcome to the Best Ever You Network, celebrating our third year on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. Thank you for helping us become a number one rated live show with over 1 million global listeners. Our team is on a mission to help you discover your authentic best self and bring it to the world. And now, here's our show.
I got so excited that we have Joan London on that I almost forgot to play that intro. Hilarious, my heart beats so fast. That's so funny. Anyway, what a cool day. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton, and I'm broadcasting today from Portland, Maine. I just returned. I know a lot of you are in my social media and we're chatting back and forth, but I just returned from my first stop of my book tour. I was in Iowa and Minnesota, mostly Iowa, and it was so great to be back home in the Quad Cities. I thank you all so much for your warm welcome home. I hadn't been home in about 15 years, and I certainly hadn't seen my good friend Paula Sands in over 25 years, which is that is too long. And so it was a great fun to see Paula Sands and be on her show, Paula Sands Live, and also be featured in the Quad City Times like that. So I thank you so much for the warm welcome home and all of your support with my new Hay House book called Percolate, Let Your Best Self Filter Through. Such a joy. And speaking of home, I'm back home now with my four boys, and the one is back home from college, and I am in all things mommy mode and best ever you mode, so kind of juggling back and forth, but baseball schedule is crazy. And but my guest today totally knows what that's like because she's a mom of seven kids, so she's got me beat by a bunch, and so she must, we're going to ask, not many people have Joan London on and they ask her about volumes of laundry, but I'm going to go there today because my laundry is piles. I can hear her chuckling. She knows. Oh, goodness gracious. But as what I wanted to say before we started the show, it's just a reminder to everyone that there are so many changes in life and choices that we make and so forth, and that I think two children also remind us that life is full of endless possibilities. And if you take a look around at these youngsters around us, they so lack fear. They make some cool choices. They go from moment to moment, sometimes without thinking or hesitating. And there's something to be learned from that. And I say in my social media every day, good morning from usually Maine, hashtag gratitude. My mom said to me as we were driving along to Iowa, she goes, what's a hashtag? I love it. I'm like, Mom, that's how people search and find you now on things like Twitter and Facebook and the Internet. And so I usually do a hashtag of gratitude. And I love that. And I know my kids are in my Facebook a lot because my kids walk around going, hashtag gratitude. Like that. They're always doing something funny around me to poke fun at me. But I think it's kind of sinking in. And the point is to help us all find joy in our moments. And you never really know that one minute you're going to be at a baseball game and the next morning, you know, for example, I'll just throw this in there, you know, you're going to be chatting with Joan London. And all of us right now have this amazing moment that we get to share over the next, you know, hour, you know, maybe a little bit less than that now that I've chatted here, but with Joan London. I mean, what a cool opportunity. So, Joan, thank you and hello.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Oh, what a busy day you're having, too, with Barbara Walters and all of that. Can you share just, I'm going to introduce you formally in a minute, but I think people are just, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule. I can look on your website, which is joanlondon.com. Let me spell that for you, L-U-N-D-E-N, for everybody listening. You can go to her website. You have a very, very busy appearance schedule, so thank you for taking time with us.
I think my whole life has been full of very, very busy appearance schedules. And, you know, to me, it's what the other day my husband said to me, I just can't ever get over your schedule. You fly out of here and you give a speech in one city, you're on a plane to the next city. And I said, but I experience that as normal. I don't experience it as overwhelming because that's pretty much been my whole life.
Yeah, and I've been a person who's followed you for a really long time, and you also have just completely paved the way for us all to be moms and have a career. We can work from home, we can work from the office. So I just wanted to thank you for that because you talk about a pioneer. You held up that baby on TV like, here's my baby, and I remember as a kid going, oh, my gosh, Mom, look at, she just held up her baby. And my mom's like, she did what? And, I mean, you've paved the way for us. Do you see
yourself
like
that?
Well,
thank you. I mean, we were all at Barbara Walters' last show because there were 25 of us there, you know, who have achieved a lot of success in the world of television broadcasting, and we were there because Barbara really paved the way for us. But it's interesting, I just got an email from Charlie Gibson who said, I saw you on the air today, and he said, and just remember, you know, people ask me about you all the time, and I always tell them that you fought a lot of the same battles that Barbara fought. You just did it in the second round of the boxing match, not the first.
Yeah, definitely.
But she really paved the way for women. You know, she came into broadcasting in the 50s. And in the 50s in this country, it was Ozzie and Harriet, Father Knows Best. And women expected to be moms and wives, and if they went to college, to be very candid, they went for that MRS degree. They figured if they weren't Mrs. Someone by the time they graduated, they had failed. And that was the time when she was, you know, banging down that door and starting to pave the way. And I watched her as a young person, you know, in late 60s, early 70s when I was in college. I was watching her, and I always thought she had the best job in the whole world.
Yeah, I think so too. I've thought that about all of you. I look at that picture of all of you there, and there's not a person in the room who I don't just completely admire and follow. Every single one of you, just an amazing group of women in that farewell picture there. Wonderful. So let me just properly introduce you, so we make sure everybody
okay.
listening, because we have a really wide range of audience ages. We have teenagers listening. We have some people who are super, have followed you since the day you stepped foot on air. But we've got a younger audience too as well. And so let me just tell everybody, Joan London helped millions of Americans greet each day as the host of ABC TV's Good Morning America for almost two decades. She was the longest-running host ever on early morning television, and you reported from 26 countries. You covered 5 presidents, 5 Olympics, 3 royal weddings, and you've continued to be a reassuring and informative presence in American homes for over 30 years. You're an award-winning journalist. I'd love to talk to you about that and some of the awards that you've received. You're a best-selling author, I think, do you have 8 books or more than 8 books?
8 books.
8 books, wow. I just got one. I'm a baby here. And a very successful entrepreneur. I love all the things on your website. Again, if you're listening to the show and want to follow along with Joan's website, it's joanlondon.com. She's also on Twitter, Joan London, and also on Facebook. Let's talk just a little bit more here about Joan. I'm going to talk about you, sorry, and then we'll get to all the questions. But Joan is the face of America's largest senior referral service called A Place for Mom, and she also founded and runs a women's wellness retreat here in Naples, Maine. And Joan, will you help me with the pronunciation of this? Because my friend...
Yeah, it's Reveille, like that little Reveille. Ditty in the
okay.
morning. I want it to be a wake-up call for women.
Beautiful. I've looked at that website, too. Let me spell that again. We spell things on radio. Reveille. So that's camp. You get to say it. You say it so beautifully.
Reveille.
Reveille. I like that. I was going to say Reveille. I was close. She has her own Resurgent skincare line by the popular Murad Skincare, and she has a line of healthy sleep solutions called Awaken by Joan London. And she's going to be on QVC this Sunday. I hope you all turn into QVC on May 18th from 5 to 6 p.m. Is that Eastern time?
Eastern time.
Eastern time. So May 18th on QVC from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. And also, Joan, like we said, she's a mother of 7 children, including 2 sets of twins, ages 9 and 11. So welcome, welcome, welcome. We're kind of here today. I think we could turn the show into a little bit of a celebration about life, women, careers, families, and everything. So, do you ever, when you're on shows like this, do you ever want to say, just let me host this?
No. I'm just as happy answering the questions.
That's so cute. Well, can we go with Disney first? I love to turn my show into a little bit of personal, and I noticed that you have this passion and love for Disney. I just went there for my first time. I'm going to be 45, and I got to play cards with Mickey Mouse. Can you tell me about the importance in all you do of fun and love, and then throw in maybe a little bit of Disney?
You know, when I was a little girl, and Disneyland out in L.A. had just opened, and a few years after it opened, my parents took me there for the first time. And I just marveled at it, and I thought, wow, it would be so cool to work here one day. And lo and behold, in the 70s, late 70s, they were opening Disney World in Florida, and I went there, and I was there for a week. We were covering the opening of Disney World, and all the networks were all there. And we literally watched them in the final days, like right before they opened the gates to the public, like laying down acres of you know, turf, of grass. And then in 1980, I was pregnant with my first child, and I remember being there pregnant and just saying, oh, my gosh, you know, here I am. I wanted one day to work, but here I am reporting on the entire Disney industry in this new amazing place. And somehow I made a connection with some of the executives at the time, and they decided right about that time to start doing the Disney parade every Christmas. So I started then and did the parade every year, and a few years later we started also doing the Easter parade. So I did the very Merry Christmas parade and the very Happy Easter parade every year for almost 20 years. My daughters grew up there. I mean, they were with me all the time. We went there probably half a dozen times a year to shoot stories for the upcoming parades. And, in fact, my daughter Lindsay, who is now 31 and expecting her first child in September, and she works for my company and travels all over the country with me, and she, during those years, actually danced in the parade. She was one of the, she danced with the characters. So it was very much part of my whole, my family life. And to me, being a part of Disney, I mean, that's a national treasure. And I don't know if you could think of anything on television that is more for everyone in the family and allows adults to be kids again and allows adults and children to kind of unite in this magical kind of spirit. So for me to be involved with Disney all those years, and I'll tell you, it was almost mutiny at my house when I decided to stop doing the parades. But quite frankly, I was doing Good Morning America. Every single vacation I had, I was working for Disney. I never got any time to ever go away on an actual real vacation, as anyone else would think about it. And I just decided that it was that time. And my kids were like, you're going to do what? You're going to quit?
Yeah, I believe it. I know my kids didn't want to leave, and we had just been there once. And it was really cute to see my husband in light-up Mickey Mouse ears. That was a moment of seeing my lawyer husband in light-up Mickey Mouse ears. Yeah, it does. It brings out the kid in everyone. And I couldn't help but see how no matter what language you were speaking or where you were from, in my opinion, it seemed like everybody was just so joined by Mickey Mouse and smiles and laughter and love. It was really neat to see all the different people from everywhere there.
It's interesting because can you think of anything else in the whole world that does that?
No, I couldn't. And I don't know. I love peace. You know, I love to talk about peace and that stuff. And I just couldn't help but think. It was almost distracting. I was thinking about it so much because there were so many people there and so many different languages and places. And what's your favorite? I'm just curious, and we'll move on to things more serious. But this is kind of serious, though, but I make you serious. What's your favorite ride at Disney? Do you have one?
Oh, that's a tough one. Growing up, I always liked Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And of course, I love Disney, Epcot Center. I mean, the whole idea of Epcot Center. And, you know, the executives, they used to come up and pick me up on the private Disney jet and take us down, and we'd watch Disney movies on board. And they told me so much about the very early days that Walt Disney had sent a team of men out to Florida to kind of explore the idea of would they want to open something on the East Coast. And he had found this area, and they came back and they said, it'll never work. It's too far north in Florida, so it's not always, you know, super sunny and hot. And it's out in the middle of nowhere. There's no infrastructure to get there. And he said, it's perfect. We're doing it. And, you know, it's kind of like build it and they will come. And they really have been responsible for putting in all of the infrastructure. They're responsible for the new airport being built there. And, I mean, that was what made Walt Disney an Imagineer, somebody who was willing to just put himself out there. And they told me about that he flew out and met, they all met to have dinner. And as they were waiting for their table, he literally took a little napkin, a little cocktail napkin, and he drew a picture on it. He said, and I want to have the Magic Kingdom, which is going to be just like out in L.A., and then I want to have, you know, the future world over here. I want Epcot Center. And I want in Epcot Center all these different countries to be represented. And I want people from those countries to be there. I don't want Americans, you know, dressing up in the costumes of that country. And what Epcot is going to do is we will bring people in and fascinate them with the they don't call them rides, but with the magic. But in what they will get there is they will get educated. They won't even realize that they're being educated about the world and about how people are the same all over the world. They'll get to find out the customs of other places in the world. They'll learn about, you know, the automobile in one, you know, in part of Epcot and the history of it. And we're going to be able, they're going to leave having a better understanding of the planet that they live on, but they'll just think that they went to an amusement park. Isn't that incredibly cool?
I wish I had his mind. I just think he's so ahead of his time. I the whole time I was there, I was also thinking, I wonder what he would have done with the internet. I wonder what if he had access to the internet
wow.
today. If he had a Twitter account or something like that, a Facebook account, I wonder what he would do.
That's changed everything, hasn't it?
It has. And my favorite ride, and still has, I took my kids on it in L.A., and now here again in Florida, is It's a Small World. I am fascinated by that.
Except when you go on that ride, you then hum that tune. Like you just said it out loud, I'm going to hum that tune for the rest of the day.
Sorry. Yeah, if I could go around and around and around and never really, I looked at the lady this last time, I'm like, do I really have to leave? There was this long line. But anyway, I just so enjoy Disney. So I'm glad that's part of you. I saw that and I just had to ask you about it because it's it feels like it's part of me too. My grandmother just passed away and she loved Mickey Mouse too. So anyway, thank you for sharing that with us. So really, I love insights and little stories that we might not otherwise hear also.
So, well, it was an honor. I mean, truly an honor to have been so involved with them and work for them.
Yeah, that is a huge honor. Speaking of, you know, grandparents and moms and aging, we're going to shift gears here because one of the reasons why we went to Disney on that was because that was the last place my husband's mom was alive and before she passed away from cancer. That was her last wish that she wanted to go to Disney in Florida. And my husband hadn't been back there since she passed away, and so she last saw the fireworks go off and then she passed away the next day. So we all had a family moment out there remembering my husband's mom, and it made me think about some of the things that you do regarding aging parents and a place for mom. And I was wondering if maybe you might tell our audience a little bit about your involvement in a place for mom.
Well, that came along very, very organically as well. My mom was elderly, and when she was in her mid-80s, I had actually taken care of her and my brother because my brother had all kinds of health complications from diabetes and really didn't work most of his adult life, just really couldn't. And so I had the two of them living together in a condo for decades. And interestingly, I never really viewed myself in the role of caregiver ever during that time. And then my mom was probably about 87, 88, and my brother died. He was only 52, and he died. And all of a sudden, I'm standing there in the middle of this condo and thinking, I can't leave my mom alone here. The only reason why she's been able to be here is that, you know, Jeff was kind of, my brother was kind of taking care of her, even though he was also ill, and I don't have a plan in place. How did I let this happen? So I started driving around my hometown of Sacramento trying to find a good place for her and, you know, made a lot of wrong turns because I hadn't been there for the day-to-day life. And when you go in to visit, everybody puts on a good face. Like, we're all fine, we're all doing great, when they're really not. And that's why I promised myself as I went down that path of caregiving that I, having, you know, the public role that I do, that I was going to do something to help millions of others not make the mistakes that I made and to get a plan in place and to ask the right questions and to have the right legal documents set and to ask the realistic, very necessary parent questions that are that you need to ask of your parents and of your grown, you know, adult siblings so that you have a plan in place. And that's how it came about. And the last place my mom lived for the last few years, very, very happily, was one of the Place for Mom residences. And, you know, they have like tens of thousands of senior communities in cities all over America, everything from very active, cool senior communities where there are condos and apartments, all the way through assisted living, through dementia care and Alzheimer's care and on to nursing homes. But I have found in my venture with them over the course of the last 4 or 5 years that one of my biggest roles is to try to get America to wrap their heads around the fact that we're living with an old myth. Everyone thinks that if you leave your home, boy, you go into a nursing home and that's it, you die a few years later. And that is so far from what life really is like today for people growing older in America. You know, and the important thing for people to remember is to stay engaged and stay active, and the best thing they can do, the nicest thing they could ever do for their adult children is to talk to them about this and to talk to them about what they want to do, how they hope to see their lives, and to be open to talk. That is the best thing, because if you get hit with this out of the blue, which is what most people wait for, that crisis phone call. Someone had a heart attack. They fell and broke their hip. They had an accident because they, you know, couldn't remember that they were driving a car. Whatever it is, it's that crisis call. And then you're forced to make all of these decisions at a time of crisis, and it turns out to be much, much more difficult than it has to be. So that's my engagement with them, and that's how I see one of my missions in life is to help people start the conversation early and get a plan in place while your parents are still, you know, thinking that they're young. But it's the time when these days when you turn 65, I mean, you could have 30, 40 years ahead of you. And if adult children don't ask the right questions, you know, it's taking down a lot of families in America today. They're dipping into their own retirement savings to pay for parents who never, never expected to live into their 90s. So I'm here to try to get the conversation going, you know, as a nation and with families.
It's a little bit of an uncomfortable one, too, isn't it? It's just, how would you start a conversation like that with aging parents?
You know something, most of the time is the chapters that we start new all throughout our life seem pretty natural. You know, you leave home to go off to college and live by yourself. You get married, and then all of a sudden someone else moves in, and you learn to live that way. You have children, and all of a sudden someone else comes before you. Like, all these different chapters through your life, they're pretty natural, and they feel natural. But when you all of a sudden have to become the parent to your parent. There's just no other way of saying it. It's just, it's a difficult one for almost everyone to have to start, you know, telling a parent that you think they should live a certain way. And my recommendation for getting that conversation started is to remember how important it is not to ever approach it with the attitude of, hey, I'm going to be responsible for you, so, you know, what am I going to have to do? Approach parents. Well, I know, but unfortunately, it's how a lot of adult children think and feel, and they know it's going to impact them at some point, and it's scary. You know, it's scary from a financial standpoint, from a logistical standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. But if you can, you know, a great idea to do is to sit down when you go on family get-togethers, whether it's the holidays or someone's birthday or Mother's Day, whatever it is, get out a video camera and say, I want to talk to you about what life was like when you were young. Like, what was America like when you were a little kid? And, I mean, this will become the most priceless possession you have. And have them take you through when they met, you know, when your mother and father met or when you were born. And if you do this and you keep it on, there's kind of a natural progression that you can say, and how about looking into the future? What do you want your future to look like? And how can I help make that happen? Because that's an incredibly positive, hopeful, compassionate, and selfless way of approaching it. Because it's just as difficult for older parents to have this conversation as it is for the adult kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that there's a thread of health and wellness in just about everything that you do.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, you're so beautiful. I just wanted to say this. I know you know this already, but you're so beautiful.
Thank you.
Everything about you is beautiful. You just radiate, and I'm sure many, many people have told you that before, but our whole The Best Ever You Network is in awe of you. Every single person who's emailed me today is saying, you're so beautiful. But I think what's so beautiful about you is not just your outer beauty, but you can hear it in your voice. You can hear it in the way you speak, what you talk about, and what you do. You just sort of have this all-around inner and outer beauty, and with this amazing focus on health and wellness. Where does the health and wellness part of you come from, and how do you, it's a double question here, and how do you personally maintain your health and well-being, because you're very fit also?
Well, and that was by choice, which is a very big theme, I think, of your show. But first of all, how this whole focus came about, my father was a doctor. He was a general practitioner when we were really little, and then became a surgeon and specialized in cancer. And he was very active in the community, and he was very giving. I mean, the whole world revolved around all of his patients. And that's how we were brought up, and I always thought I'd be a doctor. And then when I graduated from high school, I went to work in a hospital that he'd actually built in our hometown. And I found out really, really fast that stitches and scalpels would not be a part of my future.
You and me
so,
both. I thought I was going to do
but
it.
I've
too.
Always
like,
still
nope.
had, but I've still had that focus and that upbringing. And then, you know, when I went into journalism, when I got to Good Morning America, just because it was, you know, during the late 70s, early 80s, things were not equal. And being the woman on the show, I got all of these spots on health and wellness and parenting, taking care of your kids, running your home. So interestingly, I kind of got, you know, hoodwinked into those, relegated, if you will, to those spots, but I loved them. They were all of those spots that helped people live a better life and make better informed decisions as consumers and as parents and, you know, with their own health and their family's health. And you know, so that was kind of my beat, if you will, for years at Good Morning America before, you know, when Charlie Gibson came along, it became a much more balanced, equal relationship, and I started, you know, interviewing presidents and world leaders. But interestingly, it definitely kind of perpetrated my mission, my beginning mission in life. And since leaving Good Morning America, if you look at all the shows I've done, Health Corner, Taking Care with Joan London, everything, all the media campaigns, I have at my core, in my heart, how I think I can make an impact. And, you know, I think it's a good idea for everyone to have a sense of themselves. What's your brand? I mean, everybody talks about branding these days. Where do you want to make a difference? Where do you want to make an impact on the world? And mine has been very clear, you know, throughout my life, that I was speaking to parents and moms and that I was trying to help people live a better, healthier, happier life. So it makes it very easy to decide what projects to take and what projects not to take. And it's influenced me. I mean, I was on Good Morning America after having three children, and, you know, to your second part of the question, I interviewed someone from the American Heart Association one morning, and they had this, you know, little quiz for our viewers, so our viewers could assess their risk for cardiovascular disease. And I'm going through the questions: are you getting enough sleep at night? Are you eating properly? Are you exercising enough? And all of a sudden, I think, I'm failing this test. I'm completely failing this test. And it was literally like my aha moment. And I made that decision. And it's a decision, and we can all make it. I don't care where you are in your life, how old you are, or how much you have to lose weight or whatever it is, you can make the choice to take charge of your health. And it's so important. I lost 50 pounds over the course of the next, you know, year and a half. I put exercise and play. It has to be play, too. It can't just be going to the gym. It has to be finding something that you want to go back to, that takes you out and gets you going and, you know, gets your metabolism going and lets you release all those endorphins and feel good and feel better about yourself. Because once that starts, then it's kind of like you get high on it and you want more of it. And it totally changed my life and just really sent me farther along on that mission to help others.
Probably better to want more of that than, you know, like my chocolate issue.
Oh, you have a chocolate issue? You know, Elizabeth, when I was first starting Camp Reveille, which, of course, is, like, right in your backyard up there, you
I
know,
love
Naples.
It.
Naples. It's on Long Lake. Long Lake is so beautiful. It's just off Sebago Lake. And my husband, Jeff Konigsberg, has owned summer camps in Maine for a couple decades. And one of his camps is Camp Tuckahoe on Long Lake. And I've been going up there every summer for, I don't know, 18, 19 years now since I met Jeff. And, you know, at the end of camp, I would look around and I'd say, look at this beautiful facility you have. And it's August, it's mid-August, and we're going to have three of the best weekends of the entire summer. And I'm out talking to women all the time. I should do summer camp for women. We're the ones that pack the kids' bags. We're the ones that make all the plans. And my husband looked at me and said, do it. I think it's a great idea. You have the facility. Do it. And that's when I started it 9 years ago. And, you know, the whole idea is that you have to take this time out for yourself. And where it's okay, because women sometimes feel very guilty, you know, about taking time out for themselves. And we're able to provide an environment and a sense that that you not only can do this, you should do this, because you'll go back to your family and to your job and to your children and with a totally renewed, refreshed, relaxed, better frame of mind.
That's and that's in August, right?
August 21st through 24th is this coming summer, and we're signing women up from all over the country. I think our oldest camper this year is 79, and I think we have like three women signed up who are 79, and they start at age 21. We have mothers and daughters. Interestingly, we have mothers and daughters where the daughters are in their 20s and the mothers are maybe in their 40s, but we have just as many where the daughters are in their 40s or 50s and the mothers are in their 60s or 70s. It's a fun place too for women to be able to go, because if you go to a spa, if you go alone, you still have to come out of your room at night and walk into the restaurant by yourself. And a lot of women have just never really done that. They haven't gone on vacation by themselves. And here, you know, they're in bunks with a lot of other women and nobody, there's no woman left behind. And
I love that.
So it kind of gives, yeah, it kind of gives them permission to be able to come alone. And a lot of women come to me and say, this is the first trip I've ever taken by myself. You know, I always took my trips with my husband or maybe a girlfriend, but I'm here by myself, and it's okay. And I love that.
Well, I think it's important, as we talk about camp, to clarify what camp means, because being from the Midwest, camp and camping are a couple, they have different meanings here in Maine. We're not talking, camp in Maine is not a tent with, you know, sitting around the campfire with a tent and a sleeping bag and things like that.
That's camping. That's going camping.
Yeah, that's camping. Can you explain what this is?
There are camps for children all over the United States, but it is hugely prevalent on the East Coast. And there are camps that are for like 4 weeks, and there are the traditional camps, which go for 7 weeks. And children starting, finishing first grade up through about 16, 17 years old, come to camp, and they live there, and it's an amazing facility, 18 tennis courts, an amazing waterfront with water skiing, and there are 50-foot, there's a 50-foot climbing wall. I mean, we have whacked up relays. They take archery. I'm talking about the women. The women do everything that the kids do, which is what allows them to reconnect with that little inner child in them. And they probably haven't done this since they were, I don't know, 10 years old. You know, men are better at this, in my opinion, because men quite often still go out and play golf, you know, with business buddies. Many times you'll hear them, they play a pickup basketball game here or there. And we're in the pickup line. That's the only pickup we're doing. And so this allows women to, and I'll tell you something, there is another ingredient. It's not just about the climbing wall and the tennis courts and all of my yoga and Pilates and Zumba instructors. There's a magic that happens when you get a couple hundred women together. It's almost a little spiritual, but I mean, it's just this powerful, motivating, and compassionate spirit. And you see women who are headed down a tough path, whether it's a divorce or an illness, and there's someone right next to them that's already been down that path that can share with them and give them hope. And so it's that magical quotient that's this gathering of a couple hundred women and what comes from that, that was almost like the intangible that I couldn't really explain before I started the camp.
It's amazing energy, isn't it? It's like an energy field.
It really is.
It's wild. And people will get to meet you if you're there. Are you there the whole time for those 3 days?
Oh, yeah. This is not something where I put my name on it. And, you know, I mean, there are celebrities that put their names on camps. I'm there for the whole thing. I bop in and out of all the classes. I'm everywhere doing everything. I think it surprises a lot of women that I'm there. You know, I speak at every meal. We play games, and I'm always at the head of it and running around like a kid, just like everyone else. And that's fun for them.
Oh, I think it would be a blast. And you can tell you're completely down to earth and totally cool. So. I you know, sometimes you get celebrities on the phone and you're not sure if they actually go to the grocery store themselves or, you know, put a baseball cap on or whatever, but I can tell you'll do whatever and you're all good. That's really funny. So let's keep going and talk about some of the other things that you have here, because you're going to be on, talk about appearances, you're going to be on QVC this weekend, and I know you've been there before and everything, but people love QVC, and can you tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing on QVC? It's Awaken by Joan London, and I know you spent a lot of time, you know, getting, probably, did you wake up at 3:30 a.m. to be somewhere by, or were
at
you
least.
Already ready
I mean,
at 3:30?
I had to be up at 3:30 at the latest. Yeah, because we had, you know, you have 2 hours before the show of hair and makeup and wardrobe and, you know, reading last-minute script changes. And, you know, when you're on the air for 2 hours live, you're doing 7 or 8 interviews on completely different subjects every single morning. And sleep was always my nemesis, because when you stop and think about it, the day I started Good Morning America, I came into work with an 8-week-old baby. And yeah. So I was, you know, being a mommy all throughout those years. And, you know, throughout my tenure at GMA, I had little girls. I had three daughters first. And, you know, with them at all those different stages of life, and until finally in the end they were in high school, and they were staying up way later than I was. And so sleep was, interestingly, it seems to be my biggest challenge in life is getting sleep. Really? And yet I'm also so involved in the health and wellness field, I also know how important it is, you know, that it's one of the three pillars of good health, you know, exercise, diet, and sleep. So to be involved in a product line that helps other people sleep better is like the coolest thing for me. And it was one of my, when I sat down and started discussing making this kind of transition from just on-air broadcaster to entrepreneur and saying what kinds of products should I represent, an obvious one was skincare to keep you kind of, you know, looking and feeling young and vibrant, and obviously a wellness camp, and then a product to try to get you to sleep better. And so that led us to the memory foam industry. And it's funny because the first time I ever bought memory foam was for my mom. It was in one of the last places where she was living. The gentleman who was in charge says, you know, they spend a lot more time in bed, and I think you should go get your mom a memory foam mattress. So I went and bought it. She loved it. But it's kind of like it went in one ear and out the other. I figured, oh, it's for old people. However, when you stop and think about it, why do all hospitals and nursing homes and senior communities get memory foam products? Because it makes them sleep better. So now it's kind of like been filtering down into the general population, and everyone is starting to realize, you know, why it, you know, it's kind of like that top 3 inches that you sleep on, that it allows your shoulder area and your hip area, which weighs a lot more, to have a little contouring and give, so you don't wake up in the middle of the night with aches and pains. And what do? We flip over and we wake us up, we wake our partner up. And so that's how the whole idea of a sleep solution line of memory foam products came about. And, you know, you talk about QVC. It is more than just like a store on air. It's kind of almost like a community, and people who watch it are really avid, loyal viewers, and they all kind of belong to this community, and there's chat rooms, and everybody puts their, you know, their ratings on things, and it's, I first went there years ago. GMA and Charlie Gibson and I went there, and we were on a road trip, one of our many bus trips. And we went there and, you know, went on air for like a minute and a half watching someone sell something, because their hosts are utterly amazing, how they just keep on going and keep on talking for hours. I take my hat off to them. They're incredible. It is. It's just wild.
How many ways can you say that?
I know. And you know what? I'm usually on for, you know, 8 minutes at a time. I started a couple of years ago with a Joan London home line with bedding and throws and pillows, and now I'm into the memory foam. But this is going to be my first one-hour show. And I looked at the ladies in my office, and I said, I'm going to be on for 1 hour straight with no commercials, like 20 minutes for my first product. And it's like, it almost like, you know, a little light bulb gets off in your head, and so it'll be my very first. So everybody that's listening, if you watch, think about that and think about me, and, you know, give me your support at 5 o'clock. That is Eastern time, because it's earlier, obviously, on the West Coast.
Well, I think you could just appear and probably almost say nothing, and people will love you. So I wouldn't worry about it too much, because you're just loved. But I hear you on those types of things. It's amazing it seems to me like QVC equals trust. When you see a product on
it,
you know you can trust it. And the hosts are all just so likable and nice. And, you know, I agree with you. It's like a QVC family place. So good luck with everything that you're doing there. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the product, because they're starting to make memory foam with a cooling component to it for those people who are always hot when they sleep.
The whole industry has really come a long way. People who might have tried memory foam products, 10 years ago, they wouldn't even recognize the products today. They used to use something called a closed cell technology, and that was a really hard kind of a memory foam. Today, it's all open cell. And, all of the products I'm showing pretty much on Sunday all have that cooling component. Our mattress, we're doing a 10-inch mattress, which has many layers that all provide that kind of that floating, wonderful memory foam sleep. But it's got a cooling glaze on top of it. Our toppers have little clusters of memory foam that also have that gel in it to stay cool. The pillows now, we kind of do a refresh, a new version of that age-old neck tour contour pillow that if you've ever been to a chiropractor, you've got one because you didn't leave the office without it. But now we do it with, the gel glaze because, people want to have that coolness, and especially all those women that are listening today that, are over 50, we don't want to wake up hot in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And if you're cold and you're on this, you can just buy your bedding, right? It'll be perfect.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Whatever. It all works. It all goes together. That's funny. I can just see the person there with your skincare line on, going to sleep, in the bed with your Joan London blankets and all that good stuff. Could be a whole thing. You can tie it all in together.
It is. I mean, that again is kind of understanding what you represent, what you care about, and how you want to make an impact. And that kind of all is that big equal sign. That if that doesn't equal your brand, then you're doing something wrong.
It's so you because, those are the things I think of. I think when women start to age, again, these are just my thoughts. Chime in here if you have the same ones or if you differ. But as we start to age, we worry about our skin and we worry about sleep. And we're worrying about sleep for a little bit longer before we're aging when we're having children because the lack of sleep starts right there with, I know I'm a mom of four boys, and I remember when they were 0, 2, 4, and 6, I prayed for two things, a shower and sleep.
Yes.
Really.
And by the way, even I had my first three girls, but now I've got twins who are 9 and almost 11, and they're in 3rd and 5th grade. And, I think all women should be concerned about sleep, and yet a lot of people don't give it the merit that it should be given because they think, it's like a toss-away. But it's how you spend a third of your life, and if you don't get good quality sleep, it's not just the hours, but it's how deep a relaxation you go into and how good of quality it is because your immune system depends on that sleep, the renewing of cells and tissues. If you lose sleep, you literally have a more difficult time of forming thoughts and memories. And, as you start to get older, keeping your immune system really strong and healthy and being able to make sure that your cognitive thinking and your memory formation is at its tip-top best, it becomes even more critical to try to get better sleep when you're, over 45 years old. And, it's been proven that even kids, like our the ages of our children, they do better in school on tests if they get a good night's sleep. And it's been proven statistically that every year when you have that spring forward in the time and you lose 1 hour of sleep, they have a 7% increase in traffic accidents on that day every year.
Really?
People just aren't able to think as clearly. So, job-related accidents, traffic accidents, we all know when we have a foggy, sleepless day that you just aren't able to make it through your day and make decisions in the same way.
I like what you say. You talk about three pillars of good health: diet, exercise, and sleep. And I think a lot of us think about our diet and exercise, but we forget about that third one, sleep.
It's often forgotten, but it's almost like that third leg on the chair. If you don't have that one, it all falls apart. Because if you aren't getting the sleep, what happens is you don't feel like going and exercising, and you will probably eat more And so that's why it's directly related to chronic health issues and weight gain and depression. I mean, there's a lot of things that come about because people aren't getting enough sleep, and backaches. People spend Americans spend over $50 billion a year on back complaints. And part of it is sometimes just getting a better mattress and a better pillow. And I mean, it almost seems ironic that you could say that, but I mean, being a country who spends so much on that, but we have to take sleep seriously.
And that's what we're going to do. So you're going to be, again, for somebody who might be just joining us, you're going to be on QVC this Sunday, May 18th, from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern time.
5 to 6 p.m. live Eastern time, which means, you know, obviously it'll be on a little bit earlier on the West Coast.
Yeah, and you just said live. So, yep, 1 hour of
everything's
London
live. That's what's so amazing about QVC. Around the clock, they're live all the time.
Somebody write that for you, or do you have to write it? I'm sure you interject your own thoughts into what you're going to say.
No. When I'm on, I have to do it all myself. I mean, yeah, there's no script.
There's no script
handed to you at QVC. You have to just walk out and know your products, and hopefully, you know, you've picked products that are meaningful to you, and you know, I understand the entire manufacturing process of these products and why I chose the company to manufacture them that I did. So you just go out there armed with your ammunition and your passion to help others, and that gets you.
Passion,
that's what gets you through the hour.
Yeah, and the passion takes over the fear when you're
yes.
when you yeah exactly. I've got a bunch of questions here from people, but
sure.
For someone listening who's new to broadcasting, this is a question. I'm going to rephrase you a little bit, caller. For someone new to broadcasting, say 20-year-old just out of college, maybe has done an internship, what advice would you give to that person?
All right, I'm going to give that person the same advice that Barbara Walters gave to me. The very first time she came on Good Morning America after I had become host, and I had become host in August of 1980, and I was about a month into my run, and I was scheduled to interview Barbara, and I was so incredibly nervous. She was just my role model. I so admired her. And she came in. I remember she came upstairs into the makeup room and came and introduced herself to me, and she stood there and looked into my dressing room, and she saw my baby, Jamie, who is like, I don't know, 10 weeks old, 11, 12 weeks old. And she said, this is just almost unbelievable. When I had if I had ever thought about bringing my daughter as a baby into NBC, it just never would have happened. I mean, this is going to change life for women forever. And we went downstairs and I did the interview. I don't even remember what she was on for, probably one of her specials, but she took me aside afterwards very graciously and said, I'm going to give you some advice. Don't try to fight for equality and to be the top dog too soon. Like, put in your time and take every little story they give you and make each one of them shine. And it worked. And I think it's more important today to give young people that advice, because there seems to be this idea that when you come in for those first jobs that you want to be the producer to start out. And you know what? You need this. You need, like when I came to New York City, I'd been an anchor in Sacramento, and now all of a sudden I was in New York City, a street reporter, and, you know, you're running from fires to protest to, you know, the police line where the dead body is, and I thought, why am I doing this? And then I stopped and thought about it and said, I know why I'm doing this. Because I came from that little suburban environment in Sacramento, California, and I need to be out here. I need to see the poverty and the crimes and all the things that people have to endure in life. If I ever want to sit at a network level in an anchor chair and be able to really talk about the issues of the day with the level of compassion and understanding that is required. And that kind of, you know, but it takes a few years of being out there and doing it before you come to that realization. It's tough sometimes when you come out of college and you just want to be on the air or be the producer of a show. But all those years leading up to it all go into making you the kind of person that you are.
That is such great advice. Oh, I wish I had heard that when I was 20. Because I really was. I really do. I was one of those people who got out of broadcasting school, and I'm like, okay, I want to be the evening anchor, you know, kind of thing. It's like, whoa. Slow down and go be an intern for a while kind of thing.
Yep.
And it's kind of like you know at some point you could be capable of it, but you're telling people to slow down to take the process needed to get there so that when you get there, you're prepared. Is that right? Oops, I can't hear you.
Incredible potential. They still need that. They need to take the journey. And take in all that learning. And I say surround yourself with mentors. Always put yourself in a position with a lot of people around who know a whole lot more than you do to learn from them and say yes to everything. Like look for responsibility. Look for opportunities to learn more and say yes. That's how, you know, people say, oh, you've had such an amazing life. And it's because you have to have stamina. You have to have, you know, a really hard work ethic if you want to be in this business. And you have to have a curiosity about people and want to be able to share with people the news of the day. And you have to, you know, really put in your time.
Now, I also notice a trend where you don't really have to be, you know, 20, 25 anymore. It seems like there has been something else sort of shattered and put to the wayside, and that's age. It doesn't seem to so very much matter anymore, whereas I remember when I was growing up, it was, you know, you were a little bit fearful of who was coming up maybe behind you that was younger and this and that. Is that true? It just seems like it is. You see people.
I think it is now. I mean, certainly in the 70s and the 80s when I was in the business and into the 90s, there was always that concern. And I'd say in the 90s, there was a real push. You know, the different cable channels started. There were many, many more outlets for people to get their entertainment and news from. Competition got really fierce, and there was this sense that they had to have young on to appeal. And, you know, a lot of the women, my peers, we were replaced by younger women at that time. And most of them didn't work out, by the way. And, you know, in my case, it didn't work out at all. I mean, they completely bagged the show 6 months later, but I was already gone. And so Diane Sawyer came back in. But Diane Sawyer, who is more like me age-wise, she came back in. And now, you know, women are being able, they're able to stay on the air a lot longer.
Cool?
I wouldn't say it's equal at all.
No, I wouldn't say that either. But I just, you're just starting to see it where people are on the air. And it makes me so proud as a woman. I'm like, oh, good, I don't have to be done. Just because I'm 45, I can keep going. And
as people start to live longer and longer and, you know, women stay on the job, I think we'll see a situation like Barbara Walters. Look, she's almost 85 years old.
She's on the air.
I mean, it's really pretty incredible. It's awesome.
Yeah, and Diane Sawyer is beautiful, and you guys are just, it's just amazing. You guys are cool. Okay, a minute left. Is there any seconds left or so? Is there anything that I haven't asked you that we should be sure and cover really fast? We go into record mode if we go over time just a little bit. It doesn't cut off.
I just say that, I mean, your theme really sums it up. We're in charge of our own health. We're in charge of our own life. We're in charge of our own future. Honor your body. Take care of your body and make sure that you plan an active, engaged, fun life for the future. And it's your choice and it's in your hands.
Beautiful. All right, everybody. Joan London, how cool is that? What a day. I don't even know what to do with the rest of my day. This is the highlight. I guess I get to go to baseball now. And, we didn't even talk about laundry. I'll go upstairs and do some laundry, I guess, just to keep grounded. Yeah, the volume of laundry is crazy. But anyway, Joan London, everyone. JoanLondon.com. That's JoanLundben.com. Her website is gorgeous. She's gorgeous. All of her information is there. And I hope you all turn in to watch Joan live this Sunday, May 18th on QVC from 5 to 6 p.m. with Awaken by Joan London. You're going to learn all about sleep and mattresses and pillows and everything to make your life better in that three-part component of health, exercise, and don't forget about sleep. So love to you all. Thank you so much for joining us. Joan, thank you so very much. I appreciate you being with me.
It was my pleasure.
What a joy. True joy in my life. Thank you very much. All right, take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Best Ever You Network. For more information, just visit us at besteveryou.com.